Morning. I'm glad that you are here. And I first want to say welcome because we do have some people here today who don't attend here at the Cary congregation, but we want you to feel welcome. And I'm certainly glad that you're here today. And to our folks here at Cary, I'm glad that you're here today. We're going to be discussing, obviously, you're here, how to better understand grief. And one of the things I've found in counseling people and studying this and taking classes on this, this is something that everybody in one form or another has struggled with. And a lot of people are afraid of grief. They don't want to acknowledge what grief is. I would venture a guess that there are probably some people that did not come today, and it's not a bad thing, and I'm not pointing the finger at them, but I would venture a guess that there are some people that did not come today because they're scared of this topic. Because when we look at the idea of what it means to truly understand grief, it means that we have to acknowledge the problem. And for us, many times acknowledging a problem is something we don't want to do because it means we have to face the situation. And when you think about grief, there's so many different stigmas when it comes down to the idea of what grief is and fully understanding it. And one of the things that you'll hear me repeat several times today is that everybody experiences grief in their own way. Nobody goes through the grief process really at any type, any time at the same way or approach it in the same manner. Because everybody looks at their grief and everybody looks at what they're going through completely different lenses. So to us and to you, when we experience grief and when we think about grief, many times we say to someone who's experiencing grief, well, I know what you're going through because I've been through that myself. You don't. Because to that person, you have no idea the pain that they're going through. So when we look at the idea of grief today, not only collectively, you know, from the standpoint of helping ourselves when we go through grief, I also want to give you some tools to help you help someone else who's going through grief. Because I think many times we are scared to death of what to say to somebody who's grieving, how to interact with a person who's grieving, how to talk to them, how to be around them. There are so many different things that cause us to be afraid of this that many times, and we don't do it on purpose, we drop the ball when it comes to bearing one another's burdens like Paul talks about in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2. Because after all, that is the law of Christ that we help each other. But many times we don't help because we don't know how. Because we're scared to reach out, because we simply just don't know what to do. So today I want to give you some tools as we talk about this whole idea of what grief is. When you think about grief in the broad spectrum of things, grief is something really that we experience more than you think. Because when you think about grief in relation to how we live our lives, many times as you go through life, you experience small grief. So we spend our lives collecting things, and I don't mean that in a bad way. We look at getting a house and developing friends and getting a career and establishing relationships, whatever the case is. But in that series of collecting things, what happens is we lose things. We lose things through the loss of a job. If you're experiencing the loss of a job, you're going through some form of grief. Maybe you've worked with somebody, you've had a boss for 20 years who's been your confidant, someone you've looked up to and loved dearly, and all of a sudden they retire or get relocated to a new place. And the new person that's taking their place is somebody you really don't like very much. But you're experiencing grief. If you lose a dog, you're experiencing grief because that's something that's close to you. So when we think about the idea of grief, many times we just want to put it into the category of death. But it's not only about death. Because when you think about grief, it's simply losing something that's extremely important to us. And everybody has a different way that they look at grief of what is considered important to them. So when you think about the grief process, as we're going through this, what I want to give you today is how to better cope with it. Because grief is something that never, ever goes away. Don't ever let anybody tell you that. And when you think about grief in relation to how we experience it, and because it's so unique, and because it's so personal, it's very difficult sometimes. Because sometimes we don't know how to express our feelings because it's embarrassing, or we don't want people to truly see the pain that we're going through. And sometimes it's the opposite end of the spectrum. We want people to know how unfair it feels to us because we lost something that's important to us. And what begins to happen as we're going through these types of processes that we're going to talk about today, what I want you to understand is as you go through these processes in grief, nobody experiences them the same and nobody traverses them the same. Sometimes people will be stuck in a particular stage for weeks or even months. It's all on how they're going to process the idea of what grief is. Sometimes people look at grief in relation to being religious, quote unquote, as if we can handle it better than other people can. Well, I don't like to think of that, because when you think about grief, grief is very faith motivated. Because when you look at the examples that we have in the Bible for us, there are numerous examples of what grief was and how different people experienced grief. One of the verses that we learned probably very early in our childhood was John 11:35, right? We think about the Savior in relation to Him being called back because Lazarus has passed away, and it says that Jesus wept. And we understand the idea of who Jesus is as an individual because He felt our griefs and our burdens, and He took all of those things upon Him. But the verse that I pay attention to the most is the next verse. Not just since that Jesus was weeping for a friend that He lost, it was the reaction of those that were around Him that they truly saw that He was grieving, because the very next verse it says, how He loved Him. Because they saw through the pain of Christ that He was grieving over the loss of a loved one. But let's go back to the idea of talking about grief. You see, when you think about grief, and like I said just a few moments ago, many times people don't want to talk about grief because it's uncomfortable or they don't know how to approach the subject. It in essence becomes the elephant in the room. And I like this cartoon as the lawyer is asking the elephant on the stand. He said, if you were in the middle of the room, why can't we not find a single person that can give witness to corroborate your testimony? So today what we want to do is we want to talk about the elephant in the room. So as we go through this today, and as we're going to have two different sessions this morning, as we're going to look at the stages of grief. And there are 9 specific stages that we're going to talk about. Again, these don't necessarily go in order. These aren't necessarily things that you might experience in your process of going through grief in and of itself, because everybody processes that grief completely different than the other person. So as we talk about this, if you have questions, I just ask that you save those until after lunch, because when we come back, I'm going to open it up to some questions, but also I'm going to talk about some funeral etiquette that most people don't know about. And when we go to see someone who's lost a loved one, and how we talk to them and how we respond to them, and things we should say and things we should not say and things we should do and things we should not do. And many times, and I'm probably going to venture to guess here, all of us, including myself, has said and done some of these things because we don't know. And that's not a bad thing, but that's why you're here today, is simply to learn. But when you go back to the concept of looking at grief in and of itself and understanding how difficult grief is for us to experience and the emotions that come with it, because it's such a deep, deep pain. And again, maybe you've experienced the loss of a loved one. Maybe you've experienced the loss of your mobility. Maybe you've retired and you think you still have a good 10 years left in you to work or to be active, but you're not as active as you used to be. That's going through the grief process. 1 in 5 people move every 3 to 5 years in the United States. That's an extremely emotional process for individuals to go through, because you're uprooting relationships and things that you have known. You know, I grew up in the military, so I was used to moving every couple of years. Some people aren't used to that. And so through the process of losing relationships and homes and establishing things, or having established things, as you lose those things, you're grieving through the process because you don't know what you're going to do now, because the world is not what it used to be. Well, when you lose somebody, it's exactly the same way. And many times why people struggle so greatly with the process of going through grief is because they don't want to address the situation, because with that we have to face reality for what it is. And when we face reality for what it is, what happens is now we have to imagine life without that person or that thing or what we used to have. And we don't want to affirm reality because we don't want to accept reality. And many times because of this, people get stuck in a grief cycle of pain. They don't process it. They don't go through it collectively or appropriately. When you go back to the Bible, grief again is a biblical concept because we see many individuals going through it. You think about Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 8. Jeremiah was struggling with the nation of Israel because he simply wanted them to repent and come back to God. Jeremiah was one who was even wanting to give up in preaching altogether because he struggled with the idea of knowing what the nation of Israel was doing and knowing what they were going through. He didn't want to deal with it. But eventually, obviously, God is going to convince him. But even Jeremiah says, in his grief in looking at the nation of Israel, my joy is gone, grief is upon me, and my heart is sick within me. He was grieving over the fact that Israel did not love God like he did. He was grieving over the fact that Israel did not worship and serve God like he did and like they were supposed to. So when we look at grief, grief is a very biblical concept and a very biblical thing. But again, going back to this idea that we all experience grief collectively, individually more so than collectively. It's inevitable that you cannot live without experiencing grief. But here's the thing I want you to understand. You have to travel this road by yourself eventually. We can get help from people. They can help us along the way. But what I'm going to point out to you is many times what we tend to do in trying to help people with grief is we want to do everything for them. You want to know why that's wrong? Think about it this way. A patient that goes in to have knee surgery, okay? What's the first thing after knee surgery usually the doctor or the nurses do? They get them up walking, right? They have them moving that knee. They put that little device on there that's moving the leg constantly because they're trying to get them back to the state of mobility that they once used to be at. It's the same thing with grief. Many times we do this inadvertently without thinking about it when we go to somebody's house who's lost a loved one. You sit down and let me do everything for you. That's the worst thing that we can do. Because we need to get them back to a state of normality. We need to help them do these things, not do those things for us. And when we're going through the process, the best thing for us to do is to push ourselves. And again, grief is extremely hard work. And it takes a lot of our time, and it takes a lot of effort. I had somebody explain grief to me this way. He said, Larry, have you ever been so exhausted from physical exertion that you sit down and you don't even want to move your arms? He said, that's what grief feels like to me. I don't want to move. I don't want to get off the couch because she's all that I've known for 50 years. And so to me, what's the point of putting forth any effort because she was all I ever knew? You see, so when we experience the idea of grief, we want to retreat within ourselves because we think if we try and push forward, as many times people think we're forgetting the person. But when you think about grief and what God gave us, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made in His eyes, when you think about the concept of grief, God gave it to us for a reason. It's so that we feel, but also that we never forget. And one of the things I always tell people as I counsel them and talk to them is, grief in and of itself is not a bad thing. There's only bad grief. There's good grief, and there's bad grief. But it's how we experience that grief and how we go through those things that's going to help us better understand how we are going to handle the big grief when it comes. When you're struggling at work because you've lost a position or you didn't get the raise that you were looking for, as you're going through the grief process, how you handle that small grief in life is going to determine how you handle the big grief when it comes. And I talk to people, and I've sat with many people as they're sitting with their loved one who's about to pass away. And all these range of emotions are going through, or perhaps this has been an extremely long illness that has dragged out for years. And many times I'll hear the person say, well, I'm ready for it, or at least I've had time to prepare, but when the moment comes, it's not what they expected it to be. They thought it was going to be easier because I've had time to prepare. I knew this day was coming. You see, sudden grief hits us differently than extended grief. Because in extended grief, it's a slow process that continues to build until the final moment. Extended grief or sudden grief feels like a punch in the gut, doesn't it? Because it's all of a sudden and it's out of nowhere and you don't expect it. But again, like Walt Whitman says, nobody else can travel that road for you. You've got to travel it for yourself. So today I want to help you travel that road for yourself as we go through this. I want to help you understand the concept of grief, that it's not a disease, that it's not a bad thing, and whatever stigma has been placed upon it, it's okay for you to go through your process to grieve the way you want to, and don't let anybody or anyone tell you any differently. Because you have to experience the process of grief to understand where you need to be in the next phase of life. And again, sometimes those things take time. But one thing we need to understand, that again, as we go through this process, moreover, each of us individually are going to experience grief completely different. The first stage, obviously, when that grief comes into our life, whatever that grief might be, whether it's the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job, the loss, maybe it's a divorce, whatever the case might be, you're going to be in a state of shock. Now, understand why God gives us this particular stage is because we go numb when something major happens to us in life, right? And if you'll ask anybody at the onset of that particular grief, ask them particular questions about what happened, most of the time they're going to say they don't even remember. But do you know why God gives us this stage? Because it helps us to better process what's about to come. Because if we were to take all of those things at once, we would go absolutely insane. But because this is a defense mechanism for us, because this is a moment of shock to us, our body goes numb and we really don't remember anything. Because our body is going into protective mode of telling us there's something coming, and our body is giving us time to understand. Because when pain and sorrow come, because it's going to come in life, the Bible tells us that it does. And however overwhelming that is, the shock stage may last anywhere from a few moments to a few months. And if it goes any longer than that, usually I say they need to see a counselor or a doctor, because it begins to completely debilitate them and they don't even want to move. We can't allow our friends and family to stay in that stage. But we also have to understand, in that stage, they need that defense mechanism to help them for the processing that's about to take place in their life. Because there are a lot of things that are about to change completely from what they always knew to be. Whether it was the way they went about things, whether it was the way things were handled at the household, whatever the case might be, whatever your routine was in life, all of those things are now turned upside down and are completely different from what they used to be. But one of the things that a lot of people will say as they get into this stage is they're scared. And I've had many people say, Larry, I'm scared because I don't know what's coming next. One of the most prolific Christian writers of the 20th century, C.S. Lewis, wrote a book, and this is on the suggested readings that I gave you, and the title of that book is called A Grief Observed. He wrote this book as a journal, really not to be published, but rather wrote this book to express the feelings of grief that he was going through when his wife died of cancer. You see, he married his wife while she was in the hospital going through cancer. So to him, because of the sudden state that it was, C.S. Lewis, if you read any of his work, was a prolific Christian writer in the sense that he defended Christianity. He defended God's way of doing things. But as this particular situation and grief came about, he questioned everything about his life as a Christian. Now, one of the things people will say as they go into this moment of shock is they begin to question and ask, why? Larry, why did this happen? Why did God allow this to happen to me? What am I going to do now? Why doesn't God care about me? Is He even in heaven paying attention to me? But one of the things that C.S. Lewis says in the book is talking about fear. He says, nobody ever told me that grief felt so much like fear. He said, I'm not afraid, but the sensation in my gut is like being afraid. And he said, I don't know how to handle that, and I don't know how to make it go away. So again, that moment of shock that comes really expresses fear. And it's okay for us to be afraid. Why? Fear is simply the unknown. We don't know what's going to come. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how we're going to handle all of these specific things. But the process is that, again, we have to remember that shock and what you're going to go through in this moment, this first stage, is temporary. You know, it's interesting that, you know, when you go to see somebody at a funeral home, at the wake or whatever the case is, and you walk by and you talk to them and they're in this fearful stage or this stage of shock, I've heard people say, well, she's handling the death so well. She's very composed and she's almost stoic-like and you don't see any tears coming. She's in shock. This has not been processed yet, because if you've ever gone through that, you're absolutely exhausted once the funeral is finally over. I've known people to sleep for days after because they simply had no energy left. But we say, oh, isn't her faith so strong and wonderful that she's able to handle this and not cry? But then go up into her and ask her if she remembers if you were at the funeral. She's probably going to say no. Ask her if she remembers the conversation or who came in and out of her house for the last 3 days. She's probably going to say no. Because to her, everything was simply a defense mechanism to handle what's about to come in the next stage. One of the things for us that's most difficult in grief as it begins is the overload of feelings that we're about to have to deal with. A lot of people don't like to deal with feelings. Most people simply want to think. They don't want to talk about feelings, because feelings in and of itself are something that we have to address. Another thing that C.S. Lewis says is feelings, feelings, and feelings. Let me try thinking instead. I'm tired of feeling these things. Why? Because it hurts too bad. I have a hole in my heart, he said, and I can't get rid of the hole. Help me get rid of the hole. You see, when we feel so strongly about something that we lost, it hurts. And it hurts deeply down into our core, into the pit of who we are, and we simply want to stop feeling for a while. All we want to do is think. Let me process it. Let me think about the person, right? But it seems like the more we think, the more we hurt. The less we think, the more we feel. And so as we're going through this state of shock and trying to process things that are going on, we're feeling all of these sudden emotions perhaps that we've never felt before. And when we feel these things that we've never felt before, things perhaps that we've never dealt with, it hurts. And at the same time, it's scary, because you say to yourself, what is this that I'm feeling? And how do I begin to even process these things? You see, subconsciously, we don't want to believe it. And maybe even for a moment to ourselves, we will say in the process of that moment of shock, we'll say, it didn't happen. This can't be happening. It's not going to happen. But for us, it does happen. And now we have to begin to process that moment of shock, and we need to look at it and say, how am I best going to handle this situation? The one thing that I tell people, as much, as many times as people will say, I need to be alone, do not leave them alone. But here's the thing I'm going to tell you in preface to those things we'll talk about towards the end. Don't say anything. Don't try and fix it. Don't try and give advice. Just sit there and be with him. Do you remember when Job lost everything that he had? When his friends first came, they were great, right? Later, you wanted to tell him to be quiet. But when they first came, the first thing that his three friends did, as Job, remember, in the very first chapter, as Job is going through the process and the grief, remember, he's shocked. It says that he rents his clothes and he sits down in this sackcloth and ashes, and he's scraping himself as he's grieving the process of losing his family and his loved ones and all of his possessions. And his three friends come and they simply sit down with him and they don't say a word. That's all Job needed at that moment, was a present figure. And in the moment of shock and awe, because that's what it is, especially if it's sudden, in the moment of shock and awe, that person simply needs your presence. They don't need your advice and they don't need your comments. Even if they say, leave me alone, say, I'll go in the next room. Don't leave the individual alone, because they need to know that somebody's there at that moment, at that time. No matter what they might say to you. I've had people tell me they hate me because I sat with them but later apologized, because they knew and understood what I was trying to do. I was simply trying to be a presence for them at that moment when they were at their weakest and their lowest point. So for us, when we think about going through the grief process and as we get into this moment of shock, and again, there's no way to avoid the feelings that are going to come, in that moment of shock, it's okay to understand that you're going to feel numb and not know what's going on. Because that's God's mechanism that He's given you to process it and to go through this particular stage. The next stage that we're going to express, and that we typically go through pretty quickly after the moment of shock, is that we're going to express emotions. And what I've found many times as I've counseled people over the years, and as they sat down, as they're going through a particular problem in their life, what I've found as I backtrack through the cycle of problems, usually there's an experience of grief that they've never processed and emoted. So they've never expressed the grief for that, so they've never gotten through the grief process. So they're stuck in that stage. But many times as you begin to coax them to come out of that, as the tears begin to flow, they see that everything has been dependent upon that particular stage of grief that they've gone through because they've never processed it, and they've been angry over it, they've been stuck on it, they've been dwelling on it, they constantly think about it. So because of that, it's affected everything they do in life. Emotional release is a wonderful thing for us. Even sometimes when kind of the society says, oh man, you're not supposed to cry, right? Don't express any emotions. That's what I was told growing up. You know, big boys don't cry. Be tough. Tough it out. Or as I heard somebody say, don't show your emotions in public. You've got to be the stronger person. Well, to that I say hogwash. Because grief, in and of itself, has to be expressed for you to go through it. So when you need to grieve, by all means, grieve every single ounce that you can. If you've ever gone through a struggle concerning grief, after you get that good long cry out, don't you feel better? Almost as if it's some form of relief, even if it's just but for a moment. Even if that relief seems just fleeting in and of itself, it almost feels as if there's a small burden or a little bit of weight that's now been lifted off of your shoulders, right? Why? Because you're processing the grief and you're getting that grief out. We have to get through that. You know, Scriptures clearly teach the great calamities that we see and read about of men grieving over specific things. You think about David as he's writing the Passion Psalm in Psalm 22, as he's going through these things and he's saying, God, why are you forsaking me? God, where are you when all my enemies are compassing about me and they're trying to press down upon me and I'm going through all of these things and all of this process? David is grieving in all of this. But notice as he expresses this grief, as it comes back out in Psalm 23, who's he pointing towards and leaning at? God, right? You know, I read an article concerning grief, and it's interesting. And a lot of psychologists and scientists think in grief in and of itself, again, is very religious, and it's interesting that even atheists will ask God why when something happens. Don't you think that's interesting? Because in that moment, they want to blame somebody. And all of a sudden, they become believers in problems of trial and tribulation. Sometimes, as we begin to express these emotions, and this is what I want to really talk to you a little bit about this morning, as we begin to express these emotions, and many times emotions come out without us thinking about them. Many times as we express emotions towards individuals and talking, we will say things we know we would never say otherwise, right? And perhaps we don't even remember saying those things. But in that process of expressing our emotions, because it's coming out like a flood, one of the first things we want to do in trying to understand why it happened, no matter how well perhaps you might have prepared for it, is why did this happen? Because in our finite minds, in being human beings, it is understandable for us to want to know why things happen the way they do. You know, many times you'll hear preachers stand up when they can't explain something and say Deuteronomy 29:29, right? The secret things belong unto God. Because we don't understand why those things are happening, we can't grasp God's concept of why He's allowing things to unfold the way they've happened, we want to point the finger and say, God, why did you let these things happen to me? And then later I've had people say, Larry, I felt extremely guilty in asking God why He allowed those things to happen, or why I felt like I had to blame God for this particular situation. But I always tell them, you're not the only one to ask the question. You can look at the Bible and see different examples of individuals asking God why. Case in point, look at Jesus at Calvary. What did Jesus say? My God, why have you forsaken me? So even Jesus Christ Himself, in his the idea of Him being a human being that He was, even He struggled with this concept of grief as He was in the garden, crying over the whole fact of knowing what He's about to go through as those emotions are coming out, and He asked God, if there's any way, take this cup away from me. But Lord, I know it's Your will and not mine. And then we see Him again as He goes to the cross, and as He's comforting His mother and everybody around Him, He gets to the point of asking God the question, why? So it's natural for us as we begin to express emotions, and as we go through the process of grieving, it's okay to ask why, because we're trying to understand and we're trying to wrap our mind about what's happening. Because there's such a flood of information that's coming into us from every different angle that we simply sometimes don't know how to process it, and we shut down. What I always tell people anytime I sit with them is to cry and let it out. Ask. This comes later. But generally when I sit down with somebody, if I'm sitting with a family, I talk about the person. Why? Because to them it was important. To hear somebody else talk about it means it's important, means they were important to them. It means they mattered. So the question I always ask is, I ask about them, tell me about them. And usually when I ask that question, as they're going through the emotional process right after the funeral, the floodgates open wide. That's what needs to happen when we process grief. We've got to allow those emotions to come out. You know, am I saying, you know, when we think about our religion in relation to being emotional and what it means to be faithful to God? No, because there's an intellectual side. But at the same time, for us, as we go through the grieving process and the grieving side, we've got to express our emotions. And many times people will say, well, you should be over it by now. No. Because one never truly gets over grief. Never. You know, I remember the first time I really experienced someone going through a grieving process, and that was my mother when my grandfather died. And I can remember I was 13 years old, and my mother had come to pick me up at middle school. We were living in Mississippi at the time. It's where my father was stationed in the Navy. And I remember I was called down to the office. And when I got to the office, there was my mother, and she just had this blank look on her face. Well, I didn't know what was going on. To me, it was confusing. She didn't say anything. She checked me out, and we got in the car. And all of these emotions came over her, just all at once. And to me, I didn't really understand what was going on until then she mentioned to me and she told me that my grandfather had died the day before. But to her, in that moment of going completely numb, in processing everything that was happening, hers was but a short period, and we had a six-hour drive from Mississippi to Morgan City. 6 hours, she processed that grief and showed her emotions. And I sat in the back as a 13-year-old, not fully understanding, but just knowing that my mother was hurting. But I think in that, as I look back, I think those 6 hours were good for her. Because in that, she could sit collectively with a family, and she could let those emotions out. You see, in that process of grieving, as we're expressing emotions, it's completely healthy and it's okay. We need to get those things off of our chest. We need to express who we are and what we're feeling. Sometimes that comes with the anger of expressing our emotions, of asking that question why, or wanting to know why, or even blaming God at that particular moment. But those things are okay because we're processing that grief. To bottle grief up unnecessarily does harm to ourselves. And usually it will affect probably your relationships later in life, because with that, and we'll look at this a little bit later concerning anger and resentment, we'll point that grief and anger towards somebody else that doesn't deserve it. So when you think about this concerning expressing our emotions, it's okay to express those emotions. But here's probably one of the more difficult stages that we feel and that we have to go through, and that's we feel depressed and we feel extremely lonely. I like to put it this way. You know, on those days when the storm clouds are really, really dark, in the middle of the day like this, you'll have storm clouds that are so dark they completely wipe out any form or any trace of the sun. And we know even in those moments we look up at the clouds and go, boy, that's really bad. That's probably not going to be a really good sign for what's about to come. When we feel the grief that then begin begins to press down upon us, and that's usually what it feels like. It feels like somebody's pressing down on your chest and you can't breathe. Those storm clouds, as we're feeling depressed and lonely, that are keeping us separated from the sun, are the same clouds that keep us separated from our friends and family. Because many times in depression, that's what it feels like. You feel lonely. You feel like you don't have anybody. And even though perhaps they might feel that they're there, you don't feel like they are there. You know the sun is there. You know that it exists. You know that hope is going to come, perhaps, hopefully, eventually. Maybe it's going to come for me. But right now, all I see is dark clouds, and I feel completely alone, and I feel like I'm by myself. And as you look at those clouds, you say, boy, those things are moving really slowly. Am I ever going to see the sun again? So these are the questions we begin to ask. Again, people have said, as those dark clouds begin to press upon them, they ask the question, it's as if God doesn't even care. You know, does God care about me? David asked the same question. You know, when you talk about the Bible, you look in Psalm 42. David expressed the idea with his, with the idea of what grief was. I don't think that was the slide I wanted. But in the idea that grief said, or David says in Psalm 42 and verse 5, he said, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you within turmoil within me? David expressing this idea of grief, and we think about what David went through concerning the loss of his son and the grief that he expresses, and sometimes even angry with God. So as we go through the process of this lonely stage and we ask this whole idea of where God is, C.S. Lewis, and if you read any of his books prior to him writing this, you would never think this would come out of him. But the reason I always recommend this book to people, because it's a personal look at somebody's tender grief that they're experiencing, because he's very, very personal in this. But one of the things that he says as he's questioning God is, he says, where is God? God, where are you in understanding my pain that I'm going through because of the loss of my wife? But then he goes on to say, if you go to him when you're in need, is desperate, when all other help is in vain, what do you find? A door slammed in your face. That's what it feels like to be in despair and to be lonely when you're grieving. Because in those moments, and I've heard it 100 times, God doesn't care and God doesn't understand why I'm hurting like I'm hurting. He does. But it's in those moments, and it's interesting because I always like to go back to the book of Job. When Job was suffering, and many times we want to point the finger at his wife, don't we? We want to say shame on her. Don't you think she was grieving too? She lost her children. She lost her family. She lost all of her possessions. She lost her home. And in her moment of grief, Job was trying to be the stoic individual to say, look, we praise God in times of good, then we can praise Him in times of bad. Her response in grieving was to say, forget God, because look where we are at this moment. If your God is so great, then why are we suffering like we're suffering? Curse God and die. Job says, we can't do that. You see, it's interesting to think, as we often say, as we're going through struggles with our faith, and when we grieve, sometimes we struggle through faith. The first question we ask is, where is God? But when we're going through good things, isn't God great? Isn't God wonderful? He's blessed us so richly and all of the wonderful things that we have. God is with us through all of this. And do you think now, because you're going through a man-made situation of a particular problem that's happened, that in that moment that we're at our weakest, brethren, is when we need God the most? David understood that as you look at Psalm 22, as he gets into Psalm 23, as he understands, he begins to finally process, as the clouds are still dark, he says, the Lord is my shepherd. You know what, I've decided I'm not going to want for anything. It's not saying he didn't need anything. He's decided I'm not going to want for anything now, because I'm going to allow this process and understanding that God is with me, though sometimes he feels so far away. That's because the dark clouds are there. That's why he feels so distant. But you see, God is on the other side of that cloud. And he's waiting for you to process your emotions to get through the next stage and understanding that we're going to feel alone, that we're going to feel separated. Those dark days, I promise you are not going to last forever. They won't. Though they may seem like it, though you may seem like you're never going to see the sun again, those clouds are moving ever so slowly. But I promise you, those clouds will open up and you will see a ray of sun again. It'll be there. Sometimes it's difficult for us to imagine that. You know, we say in any attempt to try and convince ourselves otherwise that this is just me and people just don't understand what I'm going through. You know, and we may even begin to ask people to leave and leave us alone because I need to process all of this by myself. You know, again, these things are stretching out into weeks and months and we don't understand why the clouds aren't going away. Usually that's because we don't want them to go away. You see, this is the transition between pain and grief and reality of facing the pain and grief. Because you see, in that moment, I can stay in the house. It's dark outside. The storm is coming. I don't want to face it. I'm safe right here where I am, and I don't have to deal with it. So because I'm not going to deal with it, I'm not going to face the storm that's coming, it can stay outside and it can be there forever for all I care. And we become secluded in our own grief and our own understanding, and we never move on to the next phase. You know, again, sometimes those clouds roll away all at once. But what begins to happen is we become panicky. Again, this was the slide I was looking for earlier that David said. When he talked about being cast down concerning his soul and, you know, why is there such turmoil happening within inside of me as he's processing the idea of going through all of this, he was struggling with it. But when you think about the individual concerning their grief that is staying inside and not wanting to get out and face the storms, stage four comes and all of a sudden we begin to feel panicky. And sometimes that's not a very good feeling. You know, we try so hard to get our minds off of the subject, don't we? We try and think about anything else but that. But the emotions are there. The tears are flowing. And we become panicky and anxious and restless and how am I ever going to process this? And naturally, this hinders our effectiveness of what we're trying to do in processing this grief. And that anxiety is natural. And being panicky in this process is even natural. You know, we simply, and a lot of people say, Larry, it's like I've got a cloud in my brain and I can't concentrate and I can't think. You ever felt that way? When you're going through something really difficult, it's just like you just can't seem to get the cloud away from what you're trying to do and what you're trying to process. You know, that inability in times of grief is natural, or rather that inability to process and understand things is as natural as it can be. Why? Because this is a new way of thinking now. One of the things I tell people often is, as you begin to experience grief, know that life is never going to be the same. It's never going to be like it used to be. It's not going to be what you once always knew it to be. Why? Because what you knew it to be was included with the person that was there in it. Well, guess what? That person's not there now. So now what you're telling me, Larry, and why I'm going to stay in the house, and why anxiety is beginning to feel, is because I don't want to be in that world out there without him or her or whatever that thing is that we lost. I don't want to face that reality because that means I have to accept the fact that they're gone. That hurts, right? That's that deep down despair we feel in our stomach, and we get panicky and we get nervous and we don't want to leave the house. Because I've got to face that. I don't want to face the world. And some people begin to retreat within themselves. They become almost hermetic in that they're locking away their emotions. They're pushing themselves inward. And they're not wanting to work past that stage that's really probably one of the most difficult of trying to press through the stages of grief. Again, grief is hard work. Grief means I have to put forth effort to move forward to get past this particular moment. You know, when I think about the concept, when you think about grief and people become panicky, believe it or not, this is actually a healing and coping stage. Because in this particular stage of grief, as you're going through this, your brain is processing a lot of things. And it's beginning to store those things in particular, and it's compartmentalizing things that are important, things that are not important. Handle the house and the bills later. Handle this particular situation now. So as your brain is processing all of these things, that's natural for you to feel this enormous, immense of anxiety and feeling panicky and guilt-ridden because it seems like it's pressing down on you, but that's a coping mechanism. It's amazing to think how wonderfully God has made us to handle difficult situations. But the thing is, we don't want to trust the way God made us. We want to lock away what God has given us to cope. And all of those fight or flight and fear and all of these different emotions that God gives us to handle things, that's why I said back in stage two, we've got to express emotions. Because in that, God is allowing us to handle and process the problems that we're going through. And sometimes it feels chaotic, doesn't it? If you've ever experienced a great amount of grief, and you know, one of the things that I love about being a preacher is helping people. And I've sat with many a family after they've lost a loved one. I've sat by the bedside of someone who was getting ready to pass away in a hospital because of a long illness. I've sat with family members who are struggling because their dad has Alzheimer's and he doesn't remember them anymore. And through all of this, it seems so chaotic and there's so many things going on that it doesn't feel like the brain is processing any of the problems that are happening. But your brain is taking all of that stuff in and compartmentalizing everything that you need to do eventually. But you've got to allow yourself to push past that and to take the information in. Remember, again, working through grief is very hard work. And many times the reason people don't make progress to the next stage is because they don't want to do it. Larry, I'm not doing it. I'm staying right here in my chair. I'm not going out there. I'm not doing it. That's not the person you want to leave alone. That's the person perhaps that needs you more than ever to sit with them and let them process and go through their own phase and their own stage. But, you know, we've got to, you know, we can't wallow in gloom because it only prolongs the grief. Though it feels like the cloud is never going to part, sometimes we have to go out in the storm with the umbrella and face it. And that's life. Sometimes we have to force ourselves into a crowd or into a particular situation. You know, I love it when people are going through grief. And many times I've seen people as they've, you know, lost a loved one, you won't see them in church the next day. And I understand that. They're not ready to be around people. They're not ready to process and have everybody ask them a million questions. How are you doing? Are you okay? No, they're not okay. They're hurting. They lost the person they love or the thing that they love the most. No, they're not okay. And we bombard them and we ask them questions and we shower them with love when all they perhaps want to do is to be left alone. So they're not going to come to church. And then you have those that say, this is where I need to be because I need that support group. That's the person that's pushing through the grief process. They're beginning the process. And in that, they need to be around those that are going to support them. They don't want to feel alone. Some people seclude into themselves and they want to be left alone. And that's okay because they're processing it differently as long as it doesn't extend out to a long period of time. So again, going through that panicky process and going through these different ideas, it's hard work. You know, sometimes, you know, I remember, you know, when I lost my grandfather, my pawpaw, who I was extremely close to, I was 20 years old. When I first processed that grief was probably a month later after I went back and I was in the military and went back to my duty station. And I remember all at once just basically locking myself in my barracks room and just crying for like 2 days. You know? He was my best friend. And at that moment it hit me and I didn't understand it. I didn't want to be around my friends. I didn't want to go back to work. I just wanted to be left alone. But I knew in that, and I had a great roommate who drug me out of the room and said, come on, we've got to go get something to eat. You've got to eat something. And in that, as I step back out of the barracks after secluding for 2 days, as I'm looking at the world saying, well, I guess I've got to get back to it now. It wasn't an easy thing. But again, that was my grief experience, and everybody's grief experience is differently in how they're ready to move forward. But you've got to move forward. As hard as that next step is, as much as you don't want to take that next step, as much as you fight every ounce of your being to take that next step, I'm begging you to take that next step, no matter how small it might be. Because that's the only way you begin to process it and begin to go through it and that you begin to heal. Let's go ahead and take about a 10-minute break and then we'll come back and we're going to go ahead and finish up the next 4 or 5 stages here and get some water and kind of stretch your legs a little bit. Then we'll start back at about 5 or 10 after.